Hi, before we get to the podcast, just a short little ad here for a great, really cool event that we've got here at Texas A&M in the next few weeks that will be available for you on the web, streaming live. It's the HLKN Distinguished Lecture Series on April 7th and 8th, 2015 in Rudder Auditorium here. If you're here close, you can come see it. Our theme this year is Health, Kinesiology, and Sports Management in the SEC. Our department chair, Rick Kreider, has done a great job of lining up fabulous speakers for this. I mean, eminent scientists in so many different areas, people like Dr. Bruce Gladden, Dr. Hal Laughlin, Dr. Harold Rayner, Dr. Holly Rayner, Dr. Bob Wolf, and people like Greg Sankey, who's going to be the new commissioner of the SEC. So just Google Texas A&M, HLKNDLS, and the site will pop up, list all the speakers, list the schedule, and it will list the link that you need to hit to stream this live. So join us then. Now onto the podcast.
Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. I am your host, Tim Lightfoot. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Our goal is always to bring interesting individuals in the world of sports medicine and human performance to you, and today is no exception. We have on the podcast with us today, coming to us from Kansas State University, Dr. David Jeveltowski. Welcome to the podcast, David.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
Well, we're so glad to have you. And a big shout out to one of your colleagues, Dr. Mike Greenwood, who suggested that we chat with you. And so thanks, Mike, for that suggestion. I'm going to tell the audience a little bit about you, David, and then we're just going to jump right into it, okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
So Dr. Jeveltowski is a professor there at Kansas State University. He has a bachelor's in the psychology of exercise and sport from Western Washington University and a master's degree in psychology of exercise and sport from West Virginia University. His PhD in psychology of exercise and sport was from the University of Iowa. And once again, David, thank you so much for being with us. We're so glad to have you. It's one of the reasons that we want to chat with you today is because you are very extensively involved in developing, monitoring, assessing after-school programs for kids. Can you just start us off with that? How did you get involved in that? And give us a little bit of parameters around which you work there.
Sure. Well, you know, the basic issue, I guess, for me is how do we increase the number of people meeting public health physical activity guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the percent of the population is adults meeting public health physical activity is very low, depending upon what estimate you look at. You know, objective data would say, you know, around 8%. So we know adults aren't active. And I think there's the assumption that kids are active, but when you start looking at activity in kids, you see a decline with age, and you see really that, you know, you're just starting on that pathway to become an adult or inactive. So our interest was, how can we increase physical activity in kids? And our original studies started targeting places that kids go as a way to promote physical activity. We started with schools and did some studies that showed that, yes, we can increase physical activity during the school day. If you restructure schools by training teachers to do things a little differently, we can increase activity in schools. The next kind of question became, schools only part of the day, only one of the places that kids enter, and we wanted to look at some other places. And we started to move a greater focus to what we would call out-of-school time, or the places that kids go during out-of-school time. And one of the places we've looked at is structured after-school programs. We've also looked at other settings such as Girl Scouts, youth sport now, and child care.
Hmm. Okay. Well, it's interesting. This is a topic that we've had on the podcast several times, and that is physical education in the schools, in particular physical education in the schools. It's interesting to hear that you really started off looking at how to restructure schools to make physical activity, I guess, to increase the amount of physical activity in the schools. And we'll get back to the out-of-school places, but I think I was wondering if you would like to say a few words about the importance of physical education in schools and how that might lead to activity, and why we're all of us in our field now are starting to think about things outside of school.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got some pretty good evidence that we can train teachers and we can change school policies to change the environment of schools so you get more activity.
How would you go about doing that?
Well, the first step would be that you have time periods during the school day where physical activity is the purpose of the time period. So one way to look at that is, do you have recess?
Mm.
Do you have physical education? And now, are you integrating activity throughout the day where perhaps activity could occur, but you're focusing maybe on academic outcomes?
Mm-hmm.
So people will have lessons in the day, especially in elementary schools, where kids are moving in those lessons.
But they're still getting the reading, writing, arithmetic side.
That's right. Yeah. So you're teaching other educational outcomes while the kids are moving. So essentially the premise here is kids can be physically active, but you've got to change the environment so that the goal is to have activity as part of that environment. And what we've done in our school systems and over the last 20, 30, 40 years is we keep environmentally engineering those school environments to where the purpose is for kids to sit, listen, rather than be actively moving. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to have really good data over the last 30, 40 years because we weren't measuring these things 30, 40 years ago to document some of those trends. But I think you can look at kind of how schools are structured today and make some pretty good statements that, you know, we have less PE, we have less recess, we have less movement during the day, especially in elementary schools, when if you think back in the day, there was more opportunities for recess than now.
Right. I think as society will do is when you take away a vital aspect of growth and development for children, that there are other avenues that spring up to allow that. And I think that's what you're talking about and what you have begun to look at with you've been looking at with your after-school programs, because these are certainly an answer to some of the reductions in recess and physical education in the school systems.
Right. So if you look at the time outside of the school day, either before the school day or after the school day, this out-of-school time, then you start to think about, well, where are the places? Our original study used the term healthy places. But where are the places that kids go? And you might compare those places now compared to 30, 40 years ago when we didn't have the child obesity problem we have now. Certainly, you know, when the child leaves school, there was a greater walking or biking to school than now. So you could look at the transportation to and from school. And then you might ask the question, well, what are kids doing once they get home? And you could make the case, or make the hypothesis, I should say, that kids used to play outside, play was much more unstructured, and kids organized sport and physical activities kind of on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, with the concern for safety in two-parent working families, you're starting to see kids enter a lot more organized programs. So we have child care or after school programs where the primary goal is to keep those kids occupied, and those programs then often have other missions such as educational missions. Now we want to extend the school day through after school programs to increase test scores. In the process of that, those environments those programs are now kind of becoming like the school day, where kids are less active because they're organized around not being active and maybe doing some other things.
Yeah. Children are harder to control when they're active, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it leads to a certain chaos that some people find discomforting, especially in school systems or in after-school programs. So it's like, let's have them do things where they can sit quietly.
I think we've defined certain standards of behavior now for kids that are not necessarily compatible with kids moving.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is, you know, you're sticking kids in environments, you know, and after-school programs are an example of this, that just aren't designed for kids to be physically active. They're not outdoor, wide-open spaces. You know, they're often programs done in small rooms where they don't have gym space. So even if the kids wanted to be active, our physical environments don't support that. And then we're asking the kids, you know, we want you to improve in test scores, so we're asking them to study more, even though there's not that might be not be the best strategy to improve test scores.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the best strategy may be to let them be active in structured programs.
Right, right.
Yeah, the literature is very deep on that as well.
Yeah.
So tell us about some of the studies that you've done with how have you changed some of the after-school programs to make it more conducive for activity?
The first kind of strategy that we've taken is many research studies will go in with the research team and deliver some program on their own.
Mm.
We've adopted a public health model where we try to conduct studies that mimic how school systems or after-school programs currently work. So we go to end with existing programs, and we train the leaders of those settings. What that means is if you have after-school programs that are on the school site, you bring the site manager and you bring their staff in, and then you train them over a period of time where they go through a training and they learn the kind of the principles to promote physical activity, then they go back and implement those principles, then they come back for training again. So we have kind of a continuous quality improvement model where training occurs, they practice delivering it with the kids, they find out the challenges and the problems, they come back, they get retrained. Through that process, we see that they can learn how to structure and organize physical activity setting to create more activity. So that's one kind of strategy is train teachers to do a better job at organized activity. So when you have a session, kids are actively more active, they have more activity at a moderate to vigorous intensity level than they would have previously.
Mm.
You know, sometimes in after-school programs, a lot of the staff have no backgrounds with activity, but they're asked to deliver activity, and in those cases, many times they actually create more problems than good. And in fact, we find that after-school programs might be better off just structuring free play recess periods and keeping the leaders out of the setting, because when adults get involved in organized activity, if they don't know what they're doing, they can actually decrease the amount of activity going on.
Yeah, so just let them go have recess and try to stay out of their business.
Right, yeah. So, I would say then a policy recommendation to an after-school program would be schedule a daily period of physical activity. It would be nice if that daily period, the policy recommendation would be 60 minutes long, because we know that if there's a 60-minute long period, at least 50% of that time, or about 30 minutes of that time, kids will be physically active. So you're pretty safe that you're going to get 30 minutes of activity during after-school time if you schedule a 60-minute period. And currently now public health guidelines are that we want kids moving about 60 minutes per day. So if you figure that they get about 30 minutes, you know, during the school day, if they can get 30 minutes after school, they can meet that public health guideline.
Now how do these after-school programs overlap with the after-school sports programs? It seems that there are literally hundreds of these club sports that are springing up for children from all ages. Would those kind of things fall under the same guidelines? Or
That's actually the series of studies we're starting to target now, and that is if you think about the settings kids go to and out of school time, one type of setting is an organized after-school program. Those programs predominate in cities, especially low-income areas where families don't have a lot of money to send their kids to organized programs. So there's, you know, structured after-school programs systematically delivered in those situations. In other places, you know, people are going to different out-of-school programs. That might be Girl Scouts, that might be Boy Scouts, that might be 4-H, that might be organized sport program, where there's an organized park and recreation program where you have teams, or that's a high-level club sport system where you have teams. So if you step back and look at all those, you could make a case and say, well, you know, kids are really physically active when they go to a recreation program or when they go to a club sport program. And some of the data that's coming out now is that even in those structured sports settings, kids aren't getting much activity. So the reason for that is a lot of the people running recreation practices are parent volunteers. And then if you think about some of the high-level club sport coaches, you know, they have goals other than physical activity.
Right.
And many of those club sports coaches aren't trained in actually providing physical activity. They're actually doing what they were taught. So, you know, we can put accelerometers on kids and measure the activity in those settings and see that a kid goes to a 60-minute youth sport practice and they're getting maybe 20 minutes of physical activity the whole time of that practice.
In my head, I have 1,000 PE teachers out there that are screaming, why not get PE teachers involved in all these things? As you talk about training with after-school programs, more recess in schools, what's been the barrier to get these kind of people back involved and back engaged in the activity program? I think most people understand that activity for children is very important, but they seem to be something about our society is now looking for other people to do that.
Well, you know, that's the big question is, given that we have evidence that kids aren't active and we know how to increase activity, why can't we get that implemented across the country? And, you know, I don't know if we have really good evidence for why at this point, but I can speculate on a few things.
Speculation is fun on the podcast.
Yeah. So in terms of school PE, I think the major challenge with school PE is, and you see this even at the national association levels, is people haven't agreed on what's the purpose of school PE.
Before we go away from that, though, I guess the most things I've heard, and I guess for our listeners' sake, whether it is to focus on healthy activity or sports skill development.
Right.
Are there other controversies around that?
Well, yeah, I would throw in there, you know, some people think, that, you know, social outcomes or youth development outcomes are the purpose of PE. Some people think test scores now are the purpose of PE. And then you could argue that there's other educational outcomes related to physical activity that might be the purpose of PE. So just to give you an example, what that means is if I'm going to have an elementary PE school class, and I'm going to have, let's say, 50 minutes to deliver activity in that period of time, is my goal that those kids are active? And for the large majority of people out there doing PE right now, that's not their only goal, right? They may have other goals that their school district's asking them to deliver, or they personally believe that's important. So one goal might be that I want to improve fundamental motor skills and sports skills, because I believe that fundamental motor skills and sports skills are important to long-term physical activity participation across the lifespan. And, you know, there's some evidence coming out that may or may not be true, but you can think about those two goals and say, are they compatible? Are they incompatible? They're probably compatible, but you got to be pretty skilled to achieve both at the same time.
Right.
And then let's say, you know, you're being asked to achieve those two while you have a school district and administration saying, we're not going to give you any resources to achieve those two, and we really care about academic outcomes or youth development outcomes. And by the way, you know, you got a class the size of 50 in a room that really only accommodates, you know, 20 people being physically active.
Right.
So,
and I don't know how many people would volunteer to teach a class with 50 kids that are supposed to be active at the same time.
Right. So, on one side of things, you could blame teachers for not meeting the challenge of implementing physical activity and motor skill development, all these goals at the same time. On the flip side of that, you could say, well, you know, that's not really fair. What we really need to do is provide an infrastructure so that teachers can create an environment where kids can be active. And what that means is they need an appropriate class size, they need appropriate space, they need to be trained on what outcome they're really supposed to be delivering, and there needs to be some reward systems tied to that.
Yeah.
And right now, we just don't have a consensus at the national level, state level, local level across the country on what PE is supposed to be and how we're supposed to do it and what are the resources necessary to do it well.
Yeah.
And you see pockets where you go, oh, my God, that's wonderful. And you see other pockets where you go, oh, that's horrible, and then you want to blame the people in the school when it's not, you know, being delivered well. And you know, what our work would suggest is these are large systems issues that need to be addressed, and you can't just tell a teacher solve it.
Right. It comes down. Well, it also comes down to a society issue, isn't it?
Right.
Because society has to deem this important enough to get the schools to help solve the issues.
Right. They have to see it's the role of schools.
Yeah.
And obviously, in the last, you know, 30, 40 years, a society as a whole has essentially devalued physical activity as a primary role of the education system.
Isn't that interesting? The obesity epidemic has really reared its ugly head about that same time period.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's well. We won't go any further down that road,
right.
David, I got to tell you that I'm getting the sign here that we're getting close to the end of our time, and I really appreciate this conversation. This is really a critically important conversation, I think, that our society has to have, and I know there are many folks like you out there that are trying to have that conversation, and I know and I thank you for that, and I hope that you continue on with that, because this is, like I said, for our kids in particular, this is an incredibly important topic. And so we, at this time every week, as we start to run out of time, we give our guest a opportunity to give us a take-home message. David, as you think about what we've talked about here, what would be the take-home message? What's the thing you want people to remember?
Well, I think the take-home message is kids are active in places, and those places occur in schools, out-of-school programs, youth sport settings, and different clubs. And you really need to think about restructuring those settings through policy and training of the leaders of those settings to promote activity. And what's happened over the last 30, 40 years is that the settings have been structured to not promote activity, so we get less activity.
Well, that's a good take-home message, and a very thoughtful take-home message for our audience. And so I want to thank you again for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Well, it's been great to have you here. And I want to thank all of you that are listening for taking the time to listen today. Regular listeners of this podcast will know that at this point in the podcast every week, we have a podcast question of the week. And here with our podcast question is our producer, Ayland.
How many minutes of exercise a day is recommended for children?
That's a great podcast question, Ayland. Be the first person to answer the podcast question correctly. Send us an email at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu, and you'll win one of those nifty podcast T-shirts. And don't ever think just because you're listening to this podcast on Tuesday and it's released was released the previous Friday that you might not win. So go ahead and send in your answer. We look forward to hearing from you. And again, I want to thank all of you for being with us today. We all hope that you tune in again next week when we have another interesting person from the world of sports medicine and human performance. And until next week, we hope that you stay active and healthy.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Ayland Letzinger and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.